No commercial. We're going to go directly to Jeff Holland, who's probably going to get us to think about servers less. His words.
That is exactly right. What an amazing transition for the Blazor Power Hour that we're having this morning. I am Jeff Holland. I'm a principal PM on Azure Functions, working on Azure Serverless. And today, we are going to continue the amazing conversation and very flashy conversation that Daniel had this morning with his Blazor and his pillow around Blazor, both server-side and WebAssembly. We're actually going to apply that into a very common scenario, which is running Blazor and Azure Functions for serverless web apps. So to start with kind of what to expect for the next half hour, let's start by talking about what are serverless websites? What's some of the architectures that people are using? What are some of the benefits of why people would look into doing this? Where Blazor fits into the story? Where Azure Functions fits into the story? We're going to talk about how you deal with things like domains and delivery of that content. And then finally, we'll have some time for question and answers. So to start with, when we look at a traditional web architecture, like the kind of web app that you probably built before, has been kind of the one often talked about as a three-tiered web application, it works a lot like this, where you have a client who's got their browser, and they make a request to some website. In this case, I've got a cool hip.dev domain. So let's say I want to call jeff.holland.dev. That's the website I want to go to. Well, the browser makes that request. That request travels across the internet. It ends up landing on some server. And that server is running some code, right? Maybe this is an ASP.NET app. Maybe it's a Node app running Express. It doesn't really matter. It's just the architecture I want you to be aware of. So it's going to land on that server, and that server is going to process the request. Maybe it has some things like Razor files or CSHTML. It's got some assets and images. And the server is going to render an index.html page. And it's going to return that page back to the browser, and the browser pretty much just paints it for you, right? So this is the traditional web architecture. You've got your browser, you have a server that's running some code, maybe talking to a database behind the scenes. And this is a fine architecture, but it does have some limitations. One of the limitations is that I need a server there. So in this case, I have a website, jeff.holland.dev, right? That might be my personal website. I'm not a super popular guy. I don't really need a server running 24/7 to process those requests. But in this architecture, I need to have a server running all of the time, ready to process those requests. So I'm paying maybe some, whatever, a dozen, couple, $20, $30, $40 a month on a website that's maybe only getting a few hits a week. But on the other side of it, maybe I actually have some traffic that is incredible load, right? Maybe I actually need to scale out. And with this three-tiered architecture, I have to scale out all of these servers, because as I get all these browsers that are coming, I have thousands of browsers that all need their rendered version of an index.html page, and they need that to be processed in the server, returned back. So I also have to now scale these large servers, which can be a cumbersome process when I need to then serve this for high traffic, right? So now let's talk a little bit about a serverless web app architecture and how you can write apps in a serverless way. It starts the same. You have a user in a browser and they say, hey, I want to go to jeff.holland.dev. But in this case, instead of hitting a server, they just hit some files in storage. So it's like pulling directly from a storage account. You could almost think if I open OneDrive and I get a link and I email it to someone and they click that link, that's all I'm doing here. I'm just routing the request to say, go pull in some files. So the storage account is going to return back an index.html page and some code that needs to be rendered on the browser. So in this case, since there's no server that's rendering the page, what I'm actually relying on is the browser to render that page for me. So all of the code, all of the logic to draw the elements, to update the elements, now actually needs to run on my browser, because I don't have a server behind the scenes. I just have this storage account with static assets. Now, this is a popular architecture because in many ways it's a lot less expensive, right? I'm not paying for a server. I just need files in a storage account. I can also just have the browser do all the processing. For scale out situations, it's very nice too. But one of the challenges with this architecture in the past is that really it was JavaScript users who were able to benefit from this architecture, because JavaScript had frameworks like React and Vue and Angular that you could do this rich native rendering on the browser. You couldn't run .NET in the browser. But as we've talked about already a lot today in this week, you can now run .NET in the browser. You can have the same architecture, but have it be .NET code that's rendering in Edge or Chrome or Firefox. And this is all made possible because of this amazing technology of Blazor and WebAssembly, right? So WebAssembly is like an underlying universal technology that lets you run compiled binary code from a browser in a safe way. Blazor is the .NET implementation, a part of .NET Core 3. So now .NET developers can build these serverless web architectures too. I mentioned here, it might look a little something like this. And in the case of, I do need to call a database. While I could write Blazor code that connects to something like SQL or Cosmos DB directly, that makes me feel a little bit antsy to be thinking about all these browsers making a direct connection to my database. So the other pattern that we often see in these serverless web apps is that when you do need some code that runs server-side, like a database connection or anything to deal with data really, you can call an Azure function. And these Azure functions are serverless, so you're only paying when an execution's actually happening. You still get this amazing scale, so you get a lot of the cost benefits and the scale benefits, but you can still have some code running in the cloud. And what's nice about Blazor and Azure functions that I love is I can now write .NET code running in my function. I can run .NET code running on the browser. It's .NET across the board, right? Even if I need to pass maybe a class or an object from the browser to an Azure function, I can use the same class file in both spots. I can share code between the server and the client. This is really nice, and it also gives me benefits that when I need to scale, let's say a million people go to jeff.holland.dev, all of you watching now are like, hey, what is at jeff.holland.dev? Maybe you're poking around it right now. My functions just scale automatically, and my storage account is super elastic in how it can scale as well. And what's nice here is that while I might need thousands of rendered index.html page, all of the compute, all of the processing to actually render those pages is all happening on the browsers, right? I'm kind of taking advantage of all the users' computers. I'm making them do the hard work. Their smartphones, their laptops, their desktops are all rendering the page, and it's just up to me to make sure that I'm serving that static content. So it's a super appealing scenario. This is how I personally run my website. Or jeff.holland.dev, because I pay pennies a month for this thing, I get amazing scale, and I'm running .NET in the browser and .NET in the server as well. So I want to take some time now and demo this to let you know how you can get started building something like this. So the first one to note, I have .NET Core 3 already on my machine, and to start using Blazor, I just want to make sure I've installed the Blazor templates, right? So here at docs.microsoft.com, I have templates for Blazor right here that I can install in and be ready to go. And once that's there, I can create a new project. So let's start with the client side. Let's create a new Blazor client side WebAssembly app. So I have here a folder already ready to go, and I can just say .NET new, and I'm gonna use the template Blazor WebAssembly, or Blazor that's gonna run in the browser, right? So I go ahead and push to create. It's using the template to create a Blazor WebAssembly app. And let's go ahead and open this up in Visual Studio Code now so that you can see what this app looks like and some of the stuff that it scaffolded for us. Okay. So this is pretty familiar. You probably already saw this in some earlier demos this week as well. I have things like my startup file, which it feels very familiar to me, program.cs. I'm able to inject in some different builder and configuration aspects. I have here some different pages. These are Razor pages. In this case, these are Razor pages that are going to render in the client. The index.html page is pretty boring. It's just some HTML. The counter example is a little bit more interesting because here I have some code, and it's going to increment a counter using current count plus plus. And then finally, the fetch data example is fetching some data from an external source. My favorite line of code in all of this template, too, is this line right here. And I don't know why, but just the fact that I'm using HTTP client and I know that my good old buddy HTTP client is going to be the thing making this request from my browser, in my case using Edge on Mac, just tickles me. I love it. I love HTTP client. I love the fact that I can use it in the browser. So here I have some code, some basic pages here. If I want to as well, like let's go ahead and just test this out. Without even making any changes, I can just say .NET run. It's going to compile this Blazor template, In this case, it's going to compile it along with some WebAssembly kind of artifacts so that it knows how to run cleanly in a browser. And in just a second here, it should expose for us a localhost that we can actually browse and start to navigate to. So right here, localhost 5000, if I open that up, here now is this C# app, no code server side. It's not even doing code locally. It's just compiled it and handed it over to my browser. And my browser is now doing all of the work here through WebAssembly, okay? So now let's talk about how we can start to call some data from an external source, right? In my case, I said sometimes you might have a database, something like CosmosDB or SQL, that I don't want to call directly from my WebAssembly app. So here, let's add in some function information. So since we're already at the Blazor side, I'm going to start by creating the Blazor aspects to call a function. So let's add a new page here. Let's call it my function.razor page. And here, I'm going to type faster than a speeding bullet and paste in some code I wrote before that says, hey, I have a new page here called functions. I'm going to get my handy-dandy HTTP client that tickles me, as I mentioned before. And here, when I'm trying to initialize the page, you'll notice I'm actually calling an Azure function. Now, in this case, it's calling a function that would be running in the cloud. If I'm debugging this locally, I could change this to localhost and actually call a function that's running on my box. And then it actually even has some information here. So while it's waiting for the function to respond, it's going to say loading. And then once I get back my message from the function, it will automatically populate the message. So it's going to be dynamic as well and wait for those responses. So here I can call that function. Let's just go ahead into the navigation menu as well. And I want to make sure that there's a way to navigate to this new page. So I'm going to type that very quickly as well too. Right? So now I have what could be some code to call a function. What about my function? Where's the function that I can call? And that's super easy to set up as well. Let's go ahead here and open up another empty folder called function app. I'll just create a new window for VS Code. I could add these to the same workspace. Now here in Visual Studio Code, I've installed the Azure Functions extension. Now I could do this from Visual Studio 2019 as well, but since I'm already in VS Code, I'm just going to stick with it. Let's just go ahead and create a brand new function project using that function extension. And as I mentioned, what I love about Blazor is that I actually want to write C# client-side and C# server-side, or serverless side. So let's go ahead and choose C# as our language. These are APIs, so they're going to be triggered by HTTP requests. I want to call this my hello function, and I can give it the namespace. And with that, VS Code is now scaffolding for me a Azure Functions project that I could use to run all my code, in this case, server side. So here, this is the default template. It's pretty boring, right? It's just saying, hey, get a request, look at the query parameter, see if they passed in their name, and then say hello to their name. I could add in here, you know, connect to CosmosDB, do a query on SQL, return the results. In my case, though, let's just even simplify this a little bit. And we're just going to say return new OK object result, and we'll just say hello world. Okay. So here now is my Azure function. When I'm ready to go, I could debug this locally. I could now publish this to the cloud. So I can say, actually, I want this code to be running in Azure so it can be called whenever I need to. Right. So I have a function already here called jhollandblazor, which is the function that I could publish this to or create a new one. And so now this code can be available to run in the cloud, right, at the URL that I decide. So if I actually switch back over here, you'll notice I've already published this same app ahead of time at jhollandblazor, and I've said /hello. So let's go ahead and test this out now. Now that we've actually added some more custom code, we'll do the same thing, .NET run. It's going to compile this app, create the WebAssembly bridge, pass all those static content files over to my browser in just a second. And here, if we now open up localhost 5000 again, same data before, but you'll notice here's my new Azure Functions tab. And when I click this, you'll notice it says loading for a second, if you caught it. It said loading while it was making that call. And then as soon as it got the call back, it says the message is hello, right? So it called that function, the function returned some data. In this case, it was just a string, but I could very easily replace this with data from SQL as well. So for the last part of this, I want to show, now that I have this running locally, how do I get it so that it could actually be accessed from somewhere that's not localhost 5000, right? I mentioned before this needs to be in a storage account, so how do I go actually get this into a storage account? This is actually my favorite part of this entire demo because it could not be easier. So I'm in Visual Studio Code already. I mentioned before that I have the Azure Functions extension already installed. Let me show you one other, not task, sorry. Let me show you one other extension that I have installed. I have a lot of extensions because I love VS Code. In addition to the Azure Functions extension, I have the Azure Storage extension, which will let Visual Studio Code know how to talk to a storage account. And with this extension, I can actually get a one-click publish to a storage account. So first I need to generate the bits that I need to publish, right? So right now I've just been debugging. How do I actually generate the static content that I need to upload to the storage account? So if you're familiar with the .NET CLI, this next command I run is going to be very familiar. It's really just .NET publish. I'm saying publish me a release. This isn't for debugging anymore. I'm going to define my own output folder. In this case, just use the publish folder. I could use the default if I wanted to. And when I run that, it's going to compile my app as well. It's going to create a release profile for it. And it's going to stick it in this folder I just defined called publish. So if I come here once this is done compiling, you'll notice I have a new folder called publish. And if I open up publish, it's got all of my bits here. Now you might be wondering, what are the files that I need to copy to my storage account? There's some web config, there's some DLLs here. The answer is right here. Do you see this dist folder for like distribution? This is the folder that I want to copy and paste into a storage account. You'll notice here's the index.html page. This is kind of the static content it's going to return. It's a pretty boring page. It just pretty much says load up all the amazing WebAssembly stuff. I've got some framework things here, which have all my WebAssembly bits, my bin folder, which has my DLLs. So this dist folder is the one that I need to get into a storage account. And I mentioned this was my favorite part of the demo, because check this out. I'm going to right-click this folder, and because I have that Azure storage extension, in VS Code, I have this one-click gesture right here, which is deploy to static website. Now really all it's doing is it's just going to copy this folder and copy it into an Azure storage account for me. And it's going to configure the Azure storage account so that it can serve web content. So I could do this manually. I could do it through Azure DevOps if I wanted to. But for getting started, I really like to just say, you know what, deploy a static website. Here it's going to ask me to either create a new storage account or select an existing one. I already have a storage account called J. Holland website. So I'll just say, you know what, publish to that one. And let's go ahead and tell it to deploy. And you'll notice here it's saying copying over those 49 files into the web folder of this storage account. So as it copies those files over, it just takes a second. Now all those files have been copied. And here I can now go to jhollandwebsite.z5.web.core.windows.net. That's super easy to fit on a business card. But I can browse to that. And here I'm just hitting that storage account. And the storage account now has returned to me back all this static content that I've been able to render into this Blazor page, right? So this is no longer localhost 5000. This is now my storage account running in the cloud. In fact, if I come over here to my storage account, I can even open up this storage account. There's no magic here. Let's use this Storage Explorer preview. And here in my Azure storage account, this is just that dist folder, right? So all I'm pointing to is that I've configured this storage account to do, I'll show you all the settings here, static website hosting. So I've turned this on, which gives me a nice endpoint. And then Visual Studio Code went and copied all my files into this folder that it creates for web hosting. And all that's happening is my browser makes a request to this domain, and my storage account returns back this index.html that it can use to render the page, right? So no server anymore, just storage. Now, the last thing I want to talk about. Again, I'm not in localhost anymore, but I'm not really at a nice domain, right? I'm at jhollandwebsite.z5.web.core.windows.net, and all of you can browse to this and it will work, but it's not the kind of website I want for a blog, right? If you remember, the one I actually wanted was jeff.holland.dev is the actual web page I wanted, right? And you'll notice here, when I go to that, I actually do have jeff.holland.dev set up calling my Azure function, and it even has a beautiful certificate so that it's HTTPS enabled. So the last thing I want to talk about is how did I pull that part off, right? How did I actually get the storage account to be able to use with a custom domain like holland.dev or jeff.holland.dev? So the other aspect here, if you're going to go set this up for yourself, and there's some great docs and samples as well, is that in Azure, I have a few resources that are helping me out. For one, I've hosted my DNS records inside of Azure. So I have holland.dev as a registered domain in my Azure account. And I've actually told it, and I apologize, my Zoom here is a little bit aggressive as I've been zooming in and out. I've actually told it that when I go to holland.dev, I've configured this to route to Azure Front Door, right? So Azure Front Door is a kind of like a CDN++ service for Azure. I could also serve this directly from a CDN, but I like Azure Front Door for a few features that it provides. I've even had some other CNAMEs here too, so I can go to like jeff.holland.dev or functions.holland.dev, which will call my functions. So I have some DNS here, and then I mentioned the Azure Front Door. This is the thing that gives me custom domains, right? So at my Azure Front Door, which is kind of the delivery network resource, I've told it to serve resources for requests to holland.dev, to jeff.holland.dev, to functions.holland.dev. I've set up some routing rules here so that it will redirect always to HTTPS. Front Door gives me free certificates. I've also redirected it, so if you just go to holland.dev, it's going to reroute you to jeff.holland.dev because I'm vain and I want my full name in the URL and not just my last name, right? So there's a few other helper resources that if you're starting to build these architectures, again, that resource group I was showing you here, this is all I needed. So I have my function app, I have my DNS records, I have my Azure Front Door, I have application insights to monitor the health. That's really everything that I need to get started in hosting my new Blazor apps. So hopefully you get a sense for how you can get started using tools like Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, create a serverless Blazor app. And while this is fun for things like blogs, maybe where I'll finish too, is we also see people using this for bigger scenarios, right? So one of the things, I'll leave this page up here on learning more. One of the cool scenarios we ran into actually about a year ago is we had a large retailer who was running a massive promotion. They need to be able to serve like 10,000 requests a second because they're going to be giving a huge, huge deal. And they were worried because their website traditionally was this massive WordPress site. And they're like, it's really hard for us to scale that out to handle 10,000 requests a second. So what they did is they took just the page that was going to be hit with the promotion. They made that page into this serverless web architecture where they had Azure CDN, they had storage, they had functions. This was before Blazor, so they were using JavaScript, but the world still lives the same, like the truth are there. But they were able to run this massive promotion. This page scaled incredibly elastically. They only paid for the number of hits that it had, and the rest of their site could go be happy as a WordPress site. So this is a really interesting pattern to be aware of. I'd encourage you to try it out for your own blogs, or even if you want to try aspects of your website as a serverless web architecture. As I mentioned, if you want to learn more about Blazor, check out blazor.net. There's templates and getting started docs there. Functions pair great with it for the server code, so azure.com/functions. And thank you all very much for joining. We'll see now, Seth, if we have any questions that have come in along the way.
We do actually have some questions.
I'm glad.
By the way, well done.
Thank you.
I'm always impressed. This dude's such a good presenter. Let's start with this. Are you ready? No matter what you use with Azure Functions, it's still one of the coolest and most amazing techs. I just wanted to lob one to you.
I was going to say, is this my own tweet? Did I tweet some love
Adding Blazor to it levels up the cool factor. It's good to be cool, you know, every once in a while. At least it was for me that one time. Now, here's a serious one, because I wanted to lob one to you, and now it's a little bit a harder one. Jeff Holland, doesn't infinite scalability also mean infinite cost?
That's a fantastic question. It can mean infinite cost. So one of the things with functions that is fantastic is that you can scale per request, but there's a term in you hear in the serverless sometimes called a denial of wallet attack, where if you just hit this, if someone actually did a DDoS right now on jeff.holland.dev, you might rack up my bill a lot. So one of the things that we allow today only in some of our more premium tiers for Azure Functions, but as a way to kind of set caps so that you can be like, look, I want to have this be serverless, but I never want to be paying more than whatever, $500 a month. So something to be aware of, things like API management are also paired often with functions so that you can do things like rate limiting and throttles. So it can mean infinite cost. Even then, it's whatever, 0.000054 cents per request, but it is something to be aware of.
Yeah, but if you're racking up that many calls, your website is probably racking in more.
Exactly right. You better put some ads on that Blazor page.
All right. Last question. When will .NET Core 3.0 be supported in Azure Functions?
Yeah, this is something we're really excited about. So we actually made an announcement on GitHub about 2 weeks ago. In October, so in a few weeks, we'll have a preview of writing Azure Functions in .NET Core 3. It'll become generally available around quarter one of next year. So keep an eye out for where you can start using that, where we'll rewrite our entire host and let you write code that takes full advantage of .NET Core 3 and Azure Functions as well.
So I said that was the last question, but I lied because people are putting them in and questions are important. Mm-hmm. A question about this tutorial, will this tutorial be available for people to look at?
Yes. So right now it's scattered in a few docs. I'm actually working right now with the Learn team to try to turn this into an actual step-by-step tutorial. So there's a few docs both on the Blazor page that talk about static hosting and the Azure Storage page that talk about this. Obviously, it's a recording. I kind of did everything step-by-step. So it is there. It's more scattered than I'd like it to be. So one of the things we're doing before Ignite is turning this tutorial into an actual module that people can follow step-by-step.